Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Adani Vilmar Limited Q1 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Aniket Sethi. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Aman. Hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. At ICICI, it's our absolute pleasure to host the senior management of Adani Vilmar for the 1Q FY23 earnings call. We have with us Mr. Angshu Mallick, Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director, and Mr. Shrikant Kanhere, Chief Financial Officer. We'll start with the opening comments, post which we can open the floor for questions. Please note, the opening comments will comprise a presentation which you can also follow on the webcast link. With that, I will hand it over to Mr. Shrikant. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Aniket, and on behalf of Adani Vilmar, I welcome all the participants to this quarterly earnings call. I'm taking this privilege to present this earnings presentation on behalf of Mr. Mallick. Mr. Mallick has joined with me on the call. We'll take you through the important developments which business saw during the quarter, and then, of course, after the presentation ends, we can open the lines for question and answers. On the macro context, the quarter was full of events, starting with Indonesia banning the export of palm oil, only to open it on 23rd of May, and now, in fact, they are incentivizing the export of palm oil out of the country. To fight the inflation, and particularly with the edible oil prices, Government of India announced tariff rate quotas to the edible oil importers in the country. Adani Vilmar got 10% of the quota, which is 200,000 tons of soybean oil and 200,000 tons of sunflower oil, which we can import during the entire financial year FY23. While this is all happening, the quarter also saw a huge amount of volatility in the edible oil prices, prices going up to the level of $2,000 a ton, finally crashing down in the month of July, starting June, to a little less than $1,000 a ton as far as the palm is concerned. So this is a full of eventful quarter. As far as the multiple headwinds are concerned on the staple, we saw Ukraine war effect continuing, started in quarter four of 2022, continuing till today also. And that has certainly changed a lot of geopolitical equations. Consumption in rural India, in particular, got hit due to the high prices and inflation, which has impacted not only us, but I think most of the food FMCG companies have seen this, that the rural demand uptick was not that great. Wheat export, finally, the Government of India's initial expectation about the production of wheat a little went off from their earlier expectation, and therefore, the Government of India had to ban the wheat export. And that has resulted in wheat prices going up all-time high. Today, as we speak, it is 24,000 rupees a ton or 24 rupees a kg. As far as the macro context are concerned in terms of multiple headwinds waved on the staples are concerned, I mean, the consumption trends in edible oil, as per the Nielsen, the ROCP, which is refined oil consumer pack data which Nielsen tracks, has shown that the category itself has degrown by a little over 5.5%, close to 6% from quarter one of FY22 to quarter one of FY23. And that is also because of high prices and also the uptick of rural demand, which is not seen in most of the food FMCG segments. Amidst this, there are signs of relief. The tariff rate quota announced by the government has somehow able to control the prices of edible oil, which were all-time high sometime in month of April and May. Normal monsoon is a good news for India, and that has also eased the inflation pressure to some extent, and IMD second stage forecast to suggest that finally it is going to be a normal monsoon for India. And the big relief which came to most of the food FMCG and branded players in the market is the recent notification and clarification issued by the GST, where now GST of 5% will be charged on all the pre-packaged and labeled products, which was earlier not there. Earlier, only the branded or a registered branded products used to attract 5% GST. Most of the private label or pre-packaged labeled product used to skip the GST, and therefore thereby making branded players not which at a disadvantage. Now, this move of government actually has given a huge amount of benefit to the companies like us. It has put us into a level playing field in all the branded segments. As far as the business updates are concerned, we acquired Kohinoor in the month of May. Kohinoor, one of India's strongest basmati brand, has got a very huge recall in terms of, it's a very old brand since 1976. We have launched the brand in the month of June with the Horeca segment. The consumer brand Kohinoor would be launched sometime by end of July and early August. This will give us a very good boost to our rice business, in particular basmati rice business, which is growing consistently year after year at rate of more than 35-40%. As far as the market share is concerned, we kept the story of consolidation of market share year after year. Our market share on edible oil, standalone AWL, grew from 18.1 to 19, close to 19% now. As far as the consolidated market share along with our joint venture partner KTV, it grew from 18.7 to 19%. So we are slowly consolidating the market share, and that is also somehow reflecting in our volume growth and revenue growth. Wheat flour, we continued our market consolidation, 3.8% going up to 4.9%. We are number two player now in the country, though distant number two, but we are slowly progressing to a level of achieving double-digit market share. Basmati rice, we have consolidated share from 5.7 to 8.4, and now we should start looking our market share combined along with Kohinoor, which has got a market share currently at 2.2%. So therefore, we are close to 10% market share as far as the rice is concerned now, and we can say that we are a strong number three player in the country now. As far as the distribution is concerned, we understand this fact very well, that the company like us, who has got a pan-India operation spread across all the states, distribution is key for our success. And our all efforts, besides building a brand, we are also paying huge amount of efforts on building distribution network. The total distributor now stands at 7,874, which includes the sub-distributors also. The direct distributors at 5,732. So overall, we have been able to showcase a growth in the distribution across India. The towns under coverage has increased by 34% from 4,994 to 6,685 towns now. So total coverage stands at 6,685. New towns added close to 1,700 towns in this quarter. Fortune Mart, which is one of the initiatives which we have taken to sell our products through franchisee-owned stores, is growing good. Now we are covering covering 25 cities, 34 franchise outlets, and the sales growth is 1.3x when we compare to subsequently last quarter of quarter 4 FY22. 75% of average conversion and 28% increase in average footfall. So these are all baby steps which we are taking, but we feel that this will go a long way. This is a new initiative, a very unique initiative for any food FMCG to have its own franchise stores. It not only acts as a brand building site, but also helps us as a fulfillment center to our D2C Fortune online app. Similar story for our Fortune online app. So now we are present in 25 cities, more or less same cities where our Fortune store is located. 3.6 lakh plus apps already downloaded, 11,300 orders during the quarter, and average order value of 1,000 plus. These are some encouraging numbers, though it is still a smaller initiative for us, but we have plans to grow it a bit. The growth in average order value from 859 to 1,000 and growth in orders from 10,000 to little over 11,000 is something very encouraging. Update on the commissioning of some of the capacities we did in this quarter. Rice Bran refinery commissioned in Mantralayam of 100 metric tons per day. This will certainly add volumes to our rice bran portfolio, where we are number one player in the country today. We have also added the continuous hydrogenation plant of 300 tons per day, which is oleochemicals, our industry essential business at Mundra, and this has also resulted into the better volumes we will be able to clock as far as the oleo business is concerned. On the IPO proceeds update, we are going as per the utilization schedule which we have submitted at the time of IPO. Repayment of loans, we have already paid off all the long-term loans which were standing on the balance sheet on the date of listing. We have from a strategic acquisition point of view, we have done first acquisition of Kohinoor. The rest to follow as we move forward in quarter 2 and quarter 3. On the capex of 1900 crore which is allocated from IPO, right now 23 crore has been spent. Most of the projects have already been initiated and most of projects have got a implementation time of 24 to 30 months, and as we progress further from here, the utilization of IPO proceeds will go up. Now I will talk about the financial performance, because at the end of the day, whatever you do in terms of volumes, whatever you do in terms of revenue, right, finally has to get reflected right in terms of financial performance of the company. Revenue, consolidated revenue for the quarter up by 30% from 11,369 to 14,784. EBITDA up by 14%, which is in line with the volume growth. PBT and PAT up by 16% and 10%. So in spite of a very hectic, volatile, uncertain quarter one, we have been able to showcase the growth trajectory for the Adani Vilma, thanks to our brand and thanks to the distribution and the integrated network that company has been able to build in the last 20 years. On the segment performance, overall revenue growth of 30% and 15%. Edible oil volumes grew by 6%, And this is despite of the fact that as per the Nielsen, the branded ROCP market degrew by little close to 6%. We have been able to showcase a growth of overall 6%. In fact, our branded segment grew by 8%. On food and FMCG, a very, very strong growth, strong numbers coming up, whether it is a wheat, whether it is a rice, pulses, besan. Overall portfolio grew by 53% on volume, and now the food basket is good 860 crore, little over 100 million US for the quarter, and which suggests that we are on the track of what we have planned for ourselves in the next couple of years. Industry essential, good growth of 22%, and this is also supported by the new capacity of OGO, which we added in the quarter one at Mundra. Overall, the things are falling in place the way we have planned for. On the performance trends, 8% overall volume CAGR for last four quarters, 40% overall revenue CAGR, 31% contribution from the rural sales. While our rural sales earlier used to be in the range of 35%, which is now at 31%, and that is also one of the facts which we are talking, that rural demand uptick is not seen in this quarter, and we are quite hopeful that with the softening of edible oil prices and softening of otherwise food prices and a good monsoon should help us and should see a good uptick not only from urban areas but also from the rural areas. 111% volume growth in new products. New products are basically all the new products which we have launched in terms of Fortune, Poha, Khichdi, Chunkies, Total Balance Oil, and also a soap. Soap is now a good 100 crore brand as far as the Adani Wilmar is concerned. We have seen a very encouraging number coming in from the e-commerce, volumes up by 23%, and in modern trade, where we are present almost in all the platforms, the sales have grown by, the volumes have grown by 21%. On the short-term priorities, of course, we will continue to work towards distribution on a GTM strategy, towards expansion of rural distribution, because we believe that the next level of demand spurt is going to come only from the rural India. Inorganic growth opportunities we will continue to look at, and our whole focus will be on the core staple business, where we want to improve the portion of food business in the overall scheme of things. And we will continue to launch new products and health and wellness category. On the long term, of course, the packaged food will remain focus for the company. Integrated business model, which is also part of our IPO capex, where we would be building more and more integrated facilities across India, and build an export network for our branded foods, particularly for the rice business. And a big push that we want to give going forward is on the institutional and Horeca business, which has got a huge potential in India. So this is it from our side as far as the presentation is concerned. Now I request operator to open the line for management questions. CEO and MD Mr. Anshu Malik is here to answer the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Anyone who wishes to ask a question at this time, they may please press star and one. Our first question is from the line of Aniket Sethi. Please go ahead. Aniket, your line is unmuted. Request to please unmute your line and proceed.
Hi, am I audible now?
Yes, you are.
Oh, thank you. Hi, sir. On the Kohinoor brand, can you share some more details, such as the current scale, margin profile, given, you know, the brand particularly hasn't grown a lot in the last few years? And secondly, how is the distribution panned out for that brand, and how do you plan to scale it up?
Okay. See, Kohinoor, the McCormick had actually slowed down the operation since last 5-6 months. We took over the brand and did the agreement, and we did it by May. After May, we started work on the normal marketing and artwork and packing and all that. So by June end, we could start supplies. Their HoReCa brand is very strong, which is Trophy Royal, if you're aware of, and it is one of the most premium basmati rice used by restaurants and hotels, on A-class hotels. So that we started in June, and July we could add some more products under Trophy Royal. Then we started the Charminar brand, which is their major brand in the consumer, but the original Kohinoor packs have started going to the market now, and in next another 5-7 days, I feel most of the around major 80% of the SKUs will be ready. They had around 140 odd SKUs, which more or less will be through. They had distributors, so we had connected their distributors, and all of the distributors have agreed to work with us, and we are putting team is now ready, and team has started working. So by and large, Kohinoor, what it was 2 years back, we will take a little time to come, but slowly they had reduced their volume, so market share was going down. I am confident that by Diwali, you will see Kohinoor brand getting revived and visible across modern trade, across e-commerce, and across general trade.
Thank you, sir. That's very helpful. Just a follow-up on that. How is the current distribution of it, and are the geographies like different from what you have for the Fortune's food portfolio?
See, Fortune team is separate and distributors are separate, and Kohinoor distributors are separate. That is one. Second, Kohinoor distribution is much more stronger in South and West, which was their original forte. So there we have ensured that we continue with the same focus. North, they were weak, so I'm planning some other support with Fortune to grow in the North and East, where they have been weak. So we will use their strength. Wherever they were strong, we'll go ahead with that distribution. Wherever they were weak, we will add to Fortune distribution and go ahead. So we'll have to go market by market and do that. That is one. As far as pricing is concerned, you have asked for how it is. It is always a premium brand, and the margins are higher than Fortune basmati rice.
Sure, sir. Thank you for this. The second question, Mr. Srikanth, you mentioned that, you know, HoReCa will be a big focus going forward. So what would be the contribution currently? What are your plans here? And the sales to this particular channel, is this more of a branded or an unbranded salience which you are planning?
See, out-of-home consumption was impacted during COVID, but now it is opening up. Honestly speaking, for food business, out-of-home consumption is going to be almost equal to our in-home consumption. Other countries, even out-of-home consumption is higher. But I feel going forward, India will consume more out-of-home. So, and we have a basket of staples, say from frying oil to margarine to specialty fats to edible oil, which is regular cooking oil, to non-basmati rice, wheat flour, maida, suji, rava, besan, dal, sugar, and all the other products associated. So that means we have the basket with us. With basket, we are going ahead and going. Now, We have started working on a model which is HoReCa model, and this will have its own app, B2B app. It will have a team which will go. It will be backed by chef, and everything is branded. Because you see, this GST law which has now come is a great boon to people like us. Earlier, when I used to go with the Fortune Basmati rice or Kohinoor Basmati rice, and the other man would go with any other brand, he will get a benefit of 5% GST. On a 100 rupees rice, 5% is 5 rupees a kilo, which is quite big for a hotel. So now that is over. We are all at par. Second, our wheat flour. People want Fortune wheat flour. They don't want any other brand. So they want Fortune Maida. So already, I am now finding a lot of changes in the order that we are seeing. So going forward, Fortune as a brand will go to these hotels. That will give them a lot of comfort and also quality assurance from our side.
Got it, sir. That's really helpful. Thank you so much. Thanks, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, please press star and one if you wish to ask a question. We have the next question from the line of Latika Chopra from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Mr. Mallick and Mr. Khanare, I have some questions on the edible oil segment. Clearly, volume growth has been ahead of the market, and the market share performance has been quite robust. But I wanted to understand a few things. Firstly, on realization, it seems the realization on a sequential basis improved about 17%. We, of course, heard in media how different edible oil companies have lowered the pricing. So I wanted to understand, in the last couple of weeks, what kind of realization decline should we build in versus the Q1 average?
See, the price reduction, whatever has happened in the last 90 days, we have also gradually passed on to the consumers, and that we have been announcing it in the press. Government has also been asking all the players to pass on all the benefits to the consumers, which everybody has done. We have also done. Now, when you look at our prices, when it goes up or when it goes down, we calculate basis at what price we are buying and then our margins, and then we do the pricing. So it's a continuous affair that we do it. But let me tell you honestly, as the commodity prices comes down, the realization of the brand improves, and ability of the brand to command premium improves as the commodity prices keeps on falling. So that is an advantage to us. That is one. Second, these prices, what has come down, consumers are now feeling little better in the sense they were buying at 210 rupees mustard oil. Today, they're buying at 145 rupees, 150 rupees. So definitely, that's quite a cooling off, and they are now comfortable, and we are seeing that retailers are asking for stocks and doing it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. And that kind of was what I was trying to understand in my second question, which was the kind of decline or reduction that you were seeing realization. Do you anticipate that volume growth will make up for it? It's not that the volume growth is going to jump that meaningfully, isn't it? I mean, at the category level, volumes are down 6%, while prices moved up by 40% plus. So are we looking at lower overall revenues for this segment going forward? And the second part of the question was also on margins. How should one think about that? This quarter margins were a little soft. So should we start thinking in terms of EBITDA per ton, and any sense on where do we find that number settling down?
Okay. As far as the turnover is concerned, we always concentrate on volume. If you ask me what have we done in the quarter, our volume of 6% growth is actually our growth. Value growth is not actually in our hands, because if the market goes up, we have to pass on and if it comes down, we have to reduce. So we normally don't look at the rupee value turnover, but we look at the volume turnover, because that volume turnover will reduce my fixed cost, it will reduce my refining cost, it will reduce my freight, it will reduce my warehousing cost. So volume has great impact on all the cost factors. Second, the more I buy, I can get quantity discounts. So those are benefits. Shipping, I get freight discount if I book a bigger vessel. So if the sales are high, obviously I can book a larger vessel. Instead of 20,000 tonner, I can bring a 30,000 tonner. I get freight discount of $4-$5. So all those things adds to our bottom line. Second, when it comes to margin, let me tell you, since we have a portfolio of brands, the margin is not same with all the oil. This year, if I tell you why have we done better than others, possibly we are number one in mustard oil. And you all know that this year our mustard crop has been very good. In fact, it has saved the country because when there was crisis in Ukraine, that is the time when mustard crop was harvested and the mustard crop was bumper. We are number one player in mustard oil. Obviously, we got that all the benefits. So anybody shifting from sunflower, they either shifted to mustard or they shifted to soybean oil, where we are number one in both the categories. So we got that advantage to us. So I think the margins, one has to look from the oil portfolio. And when we look at total, it is very good. Say groundnut oil. This year we have done well in groundnut oil. Margins in groundnut oil is always high. So it helps overall basket of margins. So somewhere it is less, somewhere it is more. But since you have a portfolio, you can manage it better.
Okay. That's good to know. So at an aggregate level, you know, when you are looking at, you know, the profitability of this segment per se, is it fair to assume that you're looking at a certain EBIT per metric ton kind of a profitability threshold, which you would want to manage given the kind of volatility we are witnessing in the edible oil prices? You know, so you had about 3,000 rupees per metric ton order EBIT in this quarter. That's more or less the kind of range, you know, you would like to work with. And plus, of course, there will be scale benefits, etc., which could come in.
Yeah, so Latika, let me answer your question more from a data point of view. See, edible oil, as we kept saying right from the beginning, that we should be looking at the profitability of per ton basis rather than looking at a EBITDA or a bottom line as a percentage of revenue, because revenues are certainly get impacted due to inflation. Our edible oil business, if you look at year-on-year number for quarter 1 22 versus quarter 1 23, the EBITDA per ton is more or less flattish. It has little bit gone down by some 200 rupees a ton, and that is also because not only the edible oil prices, but I think the inflation was all around, whether it is the chemicals, whether it is the freight, whether it is power and fuel, whether it's labor. So while we have been able to pass on everything, but some bit of it we could not pass it on, and therefore EBITDA per ton on year-on-year basis has taken a hit of 200 rupees a ton. Having said that, we expect that we should be able to maintain the EBITDA per ton, what we have been able to showcase for last couple of years to go through. And since now prices have softened, the demand uptick will be there. And once you do more volume, as Mr. Malik said, your fixed cost per ton certainly will go down, and therefore margins should improve per ton.
Very clear, sir. Thank you for that. And the only last question I have is, any flavor on industry essentials, breakup across key segments? How did they behave? What drove the strong volumes? Is it oleo-led or castor oil-led or others? And how should we think about, think about properly the segment on an annualized basis, you know, because this seems to be fairly volatile on a quarterly basis, given the kind of mix that you operate with. Thank you.
Yeah, so industry essentials certainly will be driven by the two business segment. One is Castor and of course the Oleo. And as we said on the presentation that Oleo, we just added one capacity in Mundra, and therefore that should drive our business. So as far as the industry essential is concerned, year-on-year, the volumes grew by 20%, and on a sequential quarter, which is quarter four of 2022 versus quarter one of 2023, we grew by 30%. So it's a phenomenal growth, and our expectation is that the double-digit growth will certainly continue, which we have been able to showcase earlier also. As far as the margin profile is concerned, we have been able to deliver an EBITDA margins of close to 9% in FY 2023, and which is also to some extent because of some inventory gain, which we actually had in March 2022, which got passed on to this quarter. But overall, 5%-6% of EBITDA is something which we should be able to maintain as far as this segment is concerned.
All right. And Kiran, could I just have a small follow-up? If it was excluding this incremental new capacity that came on board, what would have been the like-to-like revenue growth for industry essentials? And second was that, is this fully now reflected in Q1, or there's an incremental benefit that we will see sequentially flowing through completely in Q2 from this new capacity?
So I will first answer your question. Second, it is not yet fully reflected in Q1, because when you commission a facility, you don't run that facility right from the day one on a full capacity. Depending upon the kind of demand which market is generating, you slowly pick up the capacity utilization. So it will come up, as we go forward in the rest of the year. And so therefore, if we exclude that capacity, still we would have grown in a double digit. Right now it is looking 30% Q-on-Q, and in fact, Oleo grew by 38%, by the way. If when you look at separately within the industry essential, Oleo actually grew by 38%. If we exclude this new capacity expanded, still we would have done double digit, somewhere between 15% to 20%.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Anyone who wish to ask a question at this time, they may please press star and one. We have the next question from the line of Karan Bhuwania. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Just wanted to check on the upgrading potential. Basically, so when the prices were increasing for edible oil, we saw a lot of downgrading happening, right? So once the price, since the prices are correcting now-
Karan, sorry to interrupt you. The voice is a little muffled.
Sorry, I'll just repeat. So I just wanted to check on the upgrading potential, given that, you know, the prices of edible oil was increasing, which led to downgrading. Are you seeing any upgrading in these times when the edible oil prices are correcting?
See, we have seen both things happening. One, downtrading in terms of brand, as well as downtrading in terms of pack size purchase. So we saw 500 ml and 1 liter pack selling more in rural. I am confident that come October, the 5 liter jar, which sells quite big, and 15 liter tins, which sells big in rural, will pick up. That is one. Two, I'm sure with this price reduction and rationalization, the consumers would come back to brands like Fortune, where the salience is very strong. This is mainly going to happen in a smaller tier two, three, and rural town. Metro still continues to be very strong for us, but the smaller towns, however, we see some amount of a better affinity and purchase for our brands, because the prices have come down.
Secondly, a follow-up on that, given that the prices are going down now, so when the prices are increasing, a lot of, you know, unorganized players would have exited the market. due to some issues they were facing. Do you expect them to come back, and would that lead to some market share loss, even though they have gained a lot of market share in the last couple of years and the edible oil prices are going up?
See, edible oil, these players were always there. They were on-off. When the market goes up, they would exit, and then again they come back. Their domain is very small. They are limited to certain pockets. That is why in edible oil, you know, the big players have more than 65% of the market and 35% is still with the smaller. So these people come and go. I think over a period of time, these brands are losing their strength. And as companies like us increase our rural penetration, and when we reach more and more outlets directly in the rural market, we will always have a upper hand. Second, we also have Masjid brand with us, which has been growing faster. So we will use that as a weapon to fight these players.
Okay. Thank you. One more question regarding the HoReCa business that you're targeting. How is it different from the consumer business? What other strengths you need to build to capture that market?
Very good. This HoReCa business is a different strategy than consumer B2C. This business first revolves around ability to service. Most differentiating factor will be how can you service even four tins to a Taj hotel at a banquet party. That is the answer that you have to give. So you must have very good service system. One, can you give a portfolio of product? Can you give consistency of quality? Can you give a rate contract of 6 months or 12 months? Now, all these things, big players like us can always do it. Because for me, such type of price fluctuations, I can always manage better. So, if you want sugar, you want wheat plus. Say, now that the wheat prices are going up, can I give a commitment of 6 months? Yes, I have done that with good biscuit manufacturers. I have done it with good noodles manufacturers. And I am doing it because we have wheat with us. So I can obviously buy wheat in hand and do that. So HoReCa business will require ability to service and consistency in quality. Second, you must have a team like, say, chef and all that who goes, demonstrates what is basmati rice, why should you use my basmati rice, what is the advantage, what is tough rice and all that. All these things are important. So one, you have to have a great supply chain. Second, team of people who can go, so you can afford that. And third, a range of products. So all these put together puts us as a very formidable player for HoReCa. And we are very confident that this business itself will be very, very big. There are more than 10 lakh outlets or hotels or small restaurants who consume such products.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, please press star and one if you wish to ask a question. We have the follow-up question from the line of Latika Chopra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you once again. I want some more information on your distribution piece. Could you share with us as of Q1 FY23 end, what is the total reach of edible oil portfolio and what's the direct reach now? And also, for your food business, whether it's wheat flour or rice, what's the kind of reach that these products today have?
See, we have roughly around direct reach today around 5.73 lakh outlets. Direct, I'm saying. Indirect, Nielsen reports more than 1.6, 1.7 million outlets. So this is the edible oil reach. However, if you ask me how much is atta, atta direct reach would be roughly around 1.6, 1.7 lakh outlets. Indirect maybe 2.5, because in indirect is not so big as oil. Oil is surely very big. So food is roughly around 1/3 or less in terms of total reach. So that is where we are pushing more and more, because going forward we see a bigger opportunity in improving our retail outlets for atta or rice or something.
And do you have, you know, any targets in mind? I'm sure you would have for, you know, where you want to be, you know, by end of FY 2023 or end of FY 2024. Any broad targets or you want to share?
We want to reach direct outlets 7 lakh. That is our target for this financial year. We have taken internally with our boys, and that would work out to roughly around 1.8 million-2 million outlets indirectly getting covered. That is one. And two is that we want to reach more than  10,000 small towns, less than 1 lakh population, in the rural market. So that we are doing roughly around 6,000 now, but we want to reach up to 10,000. The moment we do that, obviously the number of retail outlets also will increase proportionately.
All right. And I would believe that for similarly for food business, wheat and rice, you know, it will be even more aggressive targets.
Yes, we have taken aggressive target to reach, but their challenges are different in wheat flour because you need to be fresh, so shelf life is small. So wherever you place the product, it must be picked up fast. So all those things are actually being looked into and worked out.
All right. The second part was, you know, what is the e-commerce salience of your portfolio for edible oil and food business today?
See, in e-commerce, we are number one player. Almost 30% in leading e-com chain, we have a market share, 30%. That is one. Our mustard oil stands to be surely a dominant oil in all the e-commerce. That stands number one, and that stands the largest in terms of volume. So volume-wise, Fortune is number one brand of edible oil in all the e-commerce, and most of them, it is 30%. As far as modern format is concerned, big two modern formats, we are surely the leaders, DMart and Reliance. Others are also there, but these are the two big ones where we are the leader by far, more than 20% market share. So, in e-commerce analysis, our market share is more than general trade.
Sure, sir. And out of your total revenues that you account for edible oil and food business, e-commerce share is what? Mid-single digit, high single digit, any sense?
When you look at volume share of edible oil, e-commerce and MFS gives around 10% of the volume. 90% volume comes from general trade. But when it goes to food, say, rice, wheat flour, atta, sugar, then nuggets, there it is around 26% comes from modern trade and e-com, and whereas 74% comes from general trade.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much. And the last question.
Latika, that consumers are buying grocery more from e-commerce and modern trade.
True.
That is one.
True.
Two, good brands will play a bigger role here.
Yes, sir. I completely agree on that part. I think distribution is one of the biggest drivers for your volume growth and market share gains. The last question I had was, you know, on this short-term priorities where you've talked about M&A, and I know you've touched that in the past, but we saw you acquiring the Kohinoor brand. Looking ahead, you know, would you like to do more of such acquisitions in staples, or you are open to acquire something in a little more value-added space? And are you constrained by the size of the acquisition? I know that there are certain proceeds from the IPO which are allocated for this, but any broad thoughts here?
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it seems we have lost the line for the management. We request all participants to please remain connected while we reconnect the management. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. We have the management line reconnected. Over to you, sir. Please go ahead.
Latika was.
Yeah, Latika, please ask your question again.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, sir. Okay. So what I was asking you about was the short-term priorities. You have called out M&A, and we did see you, you know, acquiring the Kohinoor brand. What I wanted to check was, would you want to, you know, would you only consider staples as your potential acquisition targets in the short term, or will you be open towards more value-added categories also? So, you know, for example, if, you know, tomorrow, say, for example, a small biscuit company is available, would that be in your zone to explore? And separately, is there a size of the acquisition in your mind? I can see the IPO proceeds which have been allocated for M&A, but would you be willing to, you know, look at mid-sized acquisitions as well? Any thoughts? Thank you.
Okay, so let me answer your question, both the parts. One is what kind of opportunities are we looking at? I think as far as our business goes and our food basket goes, our priority, of course, would be the staple food, extension of the staple food, and to some extent, ready to cook, maybe a small volume but high price products. I am not very sure whether we would look into biscuits and other categories, because those are too much crowded categories for us to enter. But certainly, yes, staple food, extension of staple food, and to some extent, ready to cook, smaller brand but higher value products, we will certainly look into. The second part of your question was what kind of acquisition size you are looking at. See, the IPO proceeds allocated for mergers and acquisition is 450, but of course we are not bound by that number. Of course, we would be utilizing that fully. Having said that, the acquisition opportunity, whether it is a big, medium, small, we would be looking at all the opportunities depending upon how relevant that opportunity is for us in terms of top line as well as bottom line. So we are not restricting ourselves to that 450. It all depends upon what kind of opportunity comes our way and it's how relevant it is for us.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that would be our last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments. Thank you and over to you.
Thank you so much to all and for being attending and listening to us. And we have tried hopefully to answer all your questions, and anytime anybody would like to know anything, we are always open.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, that concludes today's call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.